help us lead the way.
Tell a friend.
We are WS Radio.
WSRadio.ws.
The worldwide leader in Internet talk.
This is Jacqueline Marcel, the author of Elder Rage, or Take My Father, Please, How to Survive Caring for Aging Parents. I'm your host for Coping with Caregiving, and we're going to be discussing everything you ever wanted to know about elder care, but were afraid to ask. You know, if you're coping with caregiving right now or think it is just about to befall you, this is the show for you. And don't forget to check out all the valuable resources that I have for you on my website, which is elderrage.com, where you can also see a list of my upcoming guests and listen to my archive programs. I hope you'll help me spread the word about this program to your email list and announce the show so people can know about it. Stay tuned because I've got six outstanding guests for you today. Our first guest is going to be Dr. Kenneth Doka. He's a professor of gerontology at the College of New Rochelle, and he's written 16 books. So stay tuned. We'll be back with Dr. Doka.
Quant9 Software has specialized in the development of investment software for computerized investors since 1985. The first version of their popular software was a DOS version, and Quant9 has focused on growing right along with technological advances, always on the cutting edge. The program is now known as NAIC Portfolio Record Keeper. Designed by professional money managers, this software provides investors with extensive investment tracking tools. From investment record keeping and educational tools to tax decision making and preparation, Quant9's NAIC Portfolio Record Keeper provides portfolio management solutions for all investors. At www.quantixsoftware.com. That's www.quantixsoftware.com.
This is Tony Parinello, host of the Entrepreneur Sales and Marketing Show right here on WS Radio. If you don't need more sales in less time, don't listen to my show. But if you want to get advice from the nation's leading experts on sales, marketing, and leadership, tune in each Friday, 9 to 11 a.m. Pacific Time. You'll be able to ask questions and get advice that if you had to pay for would cost you thousands of dollars. It's here, it's free, it's yours for the asking. Don't forget, 9 to 11 Pacific Time each and every Friday. Or if you're too busy making sales calls, and that's the only excuse I'll accept, you can catch me on the archives. This is Tony Parinello, host of the Entrepreneur Sales and Marketing Show, the voice of Entrepreneur Magazine, right here on WSRadio.ws, the worldwide leader in Internet talk.
Sick and tired of watered down talk radio?
Right back.
Listen to WS Radio. WSRadio.ws, the worldwide leader in Internet talk.
Hi, welcome to Coping with Caregiving. I'm your host, Jacqueline Marcel, and I'm the author of Elder Rage, with a great lineup of guests for you today. You know, a little later in the program, we're going to be speaking with Dr. William L. Minix from the American Association of Homes and Services for the Aging. Then we're going to speak with Dale Bell. He's the producer of the new PBS special, And Thou Shalt Honor. Then with Ms. Jo Rosen from the Parkinson's Resource Organization. And then to Kathleen Kelly from the San Francisco's Family Caregiver Alliance. And lastly to Rich Boyle. He's the founder and president of Elder Care Online and All's Well Caregiver Support. But our first guest today is Kenneth Doka. And he's a professor of gerontology at the College of New Rochelle, and he's a senior consultant to the Hospice Foundation of America. And he's also either the editor or author of 16 books, including one, Living with Grief, Caregiving and Loss. Welcome, Dr. Doka.
Hi, it's a pleasure to be here, Jackie.
Thanks for coming on. You know, tell us, you know, what do you think the challenges are, you know, as well as the opportunities nowadays for people that are having to go through caregiving issues?
Well, I think the challenges are very, very obvious. It's often a tremendous drain on time, on energy, on there are lost opportunities, obviously. As you take care of others, you might have to give up work and other kinds of things. But there are also opportunities inherent in that as well. And sometimes it's an opportunity to really take stock, and sometimes it's an opportunity to redevelop relationships, to rediscover some truths and things about yourself. So it's like any challenge in life. It has both opportunities and difficulties.
Yeah, you know, I would have never guessed that I would get as much out of it as I did, because it cost me my 20-year career in the television business. Cost,
yeah.
You know, no relationships. I mean, I was just so compelled by what I lived through that I wrote this book. And now it's sent me on a path of something that I'm so passionate about. And it showed me that I had strength I didn't know I had. I was tested at such a level that I was astounded that I came through it.
Yeah. Yeah, and I think sometimes that is, of course, the danger that for many, many people, I think one of the difficult things for caregivers is what I call the challenge to sainthood. You know, everyone says, oh, you've got to be a saint, and you really don't feel like a saint
no.
in the midst of it.
No, yeah, my girlfriend calls. She goes, this is the Vatican calling. I said, excuse me? She goes, yeah, we'd like to nominate you for sainthood. When I was going through this for about a year, I said, oh, somebody nominate me for something.
Yeah, really nominate me for a vacation.
Yes. So tell everybody, you know, what do you think the loss issues are for families and patients?
Well, you know, I think that's one of the things we often don't realize. We often forget all the grief that accompanies caregiving.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the things that I think we often think of grief in terms of death. When somebody dies, obviously we grieve. And that still happens. No matter what issues we've dealt with before, we still grieve their losses at the time of their death. But we grieve lots of losses along the way. Sometimes it's we grieve, and sometimes the patient himself, the person themselves may grieve their own loss of independence, their dependency, their declining abilities, particularly in the early stages of Alzheimer's. People are very aware that they're losing their memory and that they're declining. And that's very frightening, and it's a real loss.
Yes.
And I think family members also grieve. You grieve the loss of freedom that you have. The fact is that all of a sudden right now I can say, let's go out and eat. Let's go out and do a movie. When you're in charge of the care of somebody else, every decision, it involves, you know, how do we plan for this? If we're going to leave, who's going to take care of mom? Who's going to take care of dad?
Right.
Who's going to take care of my husband? One of my most profound experiences was many years ago, we met a couple on a camping trip. Our family met their family on a camping trip. And we just had wonderful interactions because this particular person, particularly the husband in this group, was such a fascinating conversationalist. A number of years later, he developed ALS.
Mm.
And I will never remember never forget the fact that his wife said to me at the time, even more than Kurt's death, I mourn the loss of his power of speech.
Oh.
You know, so it's all those losses we experience along the way, the losses of the person, and we grieve each of those losses individually.
Mm-hmm.
And again, all the losses that we experience in terms of our own possibilities and own freedoms.
Well,
for many of us, when we take on caregiving responsibilities, Now that doesn't happen, for instance, if you're caring for a developmentally disabled child or a lifelong chronic problem. But for most of us, we take on caregiving responsibilities at our time in our life when we've just been introduced to new freedoms because our children have moved out.
Right. You know, I'd love to get some free counseling from you. I'm so interested in your book here because I've just lost both of my parents after 5 years of caregiving.
Yeah.
So, and I'm coping now with the grief.
Yeah.
And it hits me like a roller coaster. One minute I'm fine. I'm just thrilled to be done with the caregiving. But I am so sad I can't have them back the way they were, healthy, and I'm mad as heck about it.
Yeah.
And then I'm frustrated with all the details of closing the end of their lives and selling everything and, oh, the paperwork. And then I'm just... I cry at the oddest moments, and it's a different kind of roller coaster than the 5 years of grief that I was going through with them. Now with the deaths, it's so final.
Yeah, and I think you've raised so many good points in just that little segment that I just would like to underline for your listeners.
Yes, and help
One
me.
One is that grief really is a roller coaster. You know,
it
some
is.
People have these notions that you sort of go through these phases or these stages, and you don't. You really have your ups and your downs, your highs and your lows, your good days and your bad days. That's really important.
And some days when you think you're having a great day, and then all of a sudden someone will remind you, or you say something and you go, oh, that would be just the way my mother said it, and I'm bursting into tears.
Yeah, I had an example where a student I was supervising doing some counseling had a client who was plunged into a reaction because she smelled lilacs.
Yeah.
And when she asked her about it, she said, well, my mother always used to wear this horrible lilac perfume. And it just, and it's that. I think another thing that you said is no matter what grief you've had during the course of the experience, all those losses, you experience the grief of death, and then all the other losses.
Yeah.
You know, giving up your parents' home, because that's also a loss.
Yes, but it's so hard.
Yeah. And there's one other piece I think that's very, very critical there. And the other piece that I think that's very, very critical is that sometimes, especially when you've had a horrendous caregiving experience, what often happens is people say, oh, you know, you're very, very lucky. This is a relief. And in some ways it is, but in some ways it's really not. And it adds to your grief and your anguish. So I think one of the things we want to give to your listeners is let people tell you it's a mixed blessing. Don't tell them it's a mixed blessing.
Yes, that's a very good point. Yeah, because it's a change.
Yeah.
You know, I was so used to my routine for 5 years of what I did and how I did it, and now everything's topsy-turvy with, you know, going through the funerals, one right after another, and now just everything that's involved with closing the end of two people's, you know, 60-year
sure.
marriage and lives together. So
and your
it's
life
a change. Sorry?
And your life with them.
Yes. It's hard.
It's very hard.
Yeah. So how should families use supportive families and friends? What's the best thing that they can say to them?
Well, you know, there's a technique that I use with families that I often like to share because it's such a great technique. And what I often do with families is I often ask them when I'm counseling with them, and often families will say to me, you know, or an individual will say to me, I'm just not getting support from other people. And what I always do is I always have them list their whole support system. You know, I said, list all the people, you know, all the people you know. And then I probe them a little bit. I say, well, what about people at work that are really supportive for you? What about people, are you involved in a faith community, in community organizations? What about those? What about children? Because children can often be great support. And I'm talking about young children, maybe nephews or great-nephews or nieces or grandchildren. And then when they list all those names, they're often surprised at how many names are on that list. Then I do another thing. I say, okay, I want you to put an L next to everyone on that list who's a good listener. You can call them at 3 o'clock in the morning, and they'll be honored that you called them. So they put L's next to all those. And then I say put a D next to all the people who are good doers. And they put a D next to all those. And again, that's interesting because people say, oh, wow, I get annoyed because my father doesn't listen to me or my brother doesn't listen to me, but he's a great doer.
Right.
You know, so sometimes we get that frustration. We ask our doers to listen and our listeners to do, and we get frustrated because we're not heard and nothing gets done.
Capitalize on their strengths.
Capitalize on their strengths, what they can offer you, the gifts they can offer you. But then there's another one, and that's an R. And, you know, when we're in the midst of grief or in the midst of any crisis, we need sometimes good respite. And what I mean by respite is we need people who can sometimes just give us a day off. We can go out with them. We can enjoy ourselves. We can laugh. We never have to worry that they're going to say, "And how are you doing?" Because they hope to all hope that we don't tell them. But you know, but sometimes we have to realize that that too is a gift.
Yes. Yes. You know, I've been finding because I'm so busy during the week between the show, doing this show, and I'm traveling and I'm lecturing and I'm doing, and then on Sundays it's kind of like. Oh, so I've been scheduling now with my doers and my listeners and my, you know, people that can give me to be with my friends and make sure that my Sundays are occupied with enjoyment and so that I'm not alone and I'm not feeling so sad. So it's planning.
Yeah, yeah.
So tell us, what else? What else about formal support systems?
Well, you know, I think it's also important to realize that, you know, that one of the things that's really different about our environment now is that we really have all kinds of organizations out there that can be supportive. You know, so for instance, you can look at advocacy organizations like, you know, like organizations that work with dementia. You can check to see with your Office on Aging or Office of Mental Retardation, Developmental Disabilities, whatever it's called in a given area, what kinds of supports are available. Sometimes we don't realize how much help is actually out there.
I didn't. When I was going through it, I was looking for help, but I wasn't looking in the right places.
Yeah, yeah. And sometimes we just assume that there isn't.
Yeah.
And there may not have been 20 years ago, and that may be the basis of our experience.
But not now. Tell us about what you're doing over there at the Hospice Foundation of America. How can people get involved with that?
Well, they can check out the webpage, www.hospicefoundation.org. And it's just a wonderful organization, a hospice organization, and they can check with local hospices, too, to see what ways and what opportunities they might have to help provide very active volunteer experiences and respite. What we're doing at the Hospice Foundation is we're essentially an educational foundation. Next year, we're planning in April a teleconference with Koki Roberts called Living with Grief, Coping with Public Tragedy. So that'll help us as we look at what are some of the ways that individuals are affected by public tragedy, and what are some of the ways that hospices and others can help.
Oh, great. And so tell us some more about your book, because I want to plug your book here, Living with Grief and Caregiving and Loss.
Well, that's, one of the things we try to do every year with the Hospice Foundation in terms of the teleconference is we try to put out a companion book. And each of these books really focuses very specifically on a very narrowly defined topic, loss in later life, coping with public tragedy, children, adolescents, and loss. And we really try to create an array of it's an edited book, an array of articles that really try to deal with all the dimensions of that, as well as the ways that persons can help themselves and the ways in which they can help others and the ways in which they can get help. And I think that book on caregiving and loss does that so very well.
And because there's 77 million baby boomers, and everybody out there, a baby boomer is anybody born between 1946 and 1964.
Mm-hmm.
And so all these baby boomers have parents in their late 60s, 70s, and 80s. So that large population of baby boomers are starting to go through so much grief and loss. It's a large population that's starting to experience this.
Yes, and starting to struggle with their own caregiving issues if they haven't struggled with them yet.
Yeah. Wow, there's a lot to know. So is there any other thing that counselors can do to help people, or any other guidance you can give our listeners about coping with grief and loss and where to find...
Well, I think the key issue is just be a good listener. Because, again, very often what we want to do when we talk with people is we want to take away their pain. We want to say something almost magical that's going to say, I feel really great now. You're not going to feel great immediately following a loss. What people really need is an opportunity to talk about how they're feeling, to get support, to do what your gift is to do,
right.
Whether it's to listen, to help.
Send them an email, how are you feeling today? I love it when people, send me an extra email, an extra call, a card, how's it going now? It's been a couple months, just that they're thinking about you.
Yeah, just that. And I always say, risk it. People say, I don't know if I should mention it. Well, if you're in the middle of dealing with a loss, you don't need to be reminded that you're dealing with a loss.
You know it.
So, you know it. So it helps when people say, you can follow their lead. If you see that they really don't want to get into that conversation, back off. But it always helps to venture. I always say there are three things you can do if you're a friend of someone who's grieving. Three Ds, I call it. The first is to validate their grief. Don't try to talk them out of their feelings. Just understand, recognize, acknowledge. Second of all is volunteer. Be there. Don't say, if I can do anything, do something.
Right.
Just say, hey, listen,
Oh, we're almost out of time. I want to make sure we give your website. It's hospicefoundation.org.
And I got to tell you, the last one is venture.
Venture.
Take the risk.
Take the risk. Oh, such a pleasure to talk with you.
Thank you so much, Jackie.
All right. Talk to you soon. Bye now, Dr. Durka.
Take care.
This is Jacqueline Marcel. I'm the author of Elder Rage and your host for Coping with Caregiving. I hope you're going to join us here every Saturday. Please tell your friends and be sure to let them know that they can listen to the archived Coping with Caregiving programs online anytime. Now stay tuned, because coming up next, we're going to be speaking with Dr. William L. Minix. He's the president and CEO of the American Association of Homes and Services for the Aging.
Help us lead the way.
Tell a friend.
We are WS Radio.
WSRadio.ws.
The worldwide leader in Internet talk.
We have a tropical depression gaining real strength.
The most powerful force on Earth. The hurricane. Responsible for millions of dollars of damage and loss of life every year. The hurricane. A force to be feared. Yet, we'll look it right in the eye. We are the men and women of the Air Force Reserve, and our world-renowned hurricane hunters go above and beyond, flying directly into nature's most destructive force. We do it to gather the data that makes the difference between safety and disaster. We do it for our communities. We do it for our country. And you can do it too with the Air Force Reserve, because the hurricane hunters are just one of the many exciting careers available with the Air Force Reserve. It may be a part-time job, but it's a full-time experience.
Air Force Reserve, above and beyond. For information, call 1-800-257-1212.